Never. You were never going to steal my man. Okay? I am the current. You are the former. I am his future. You are his very distant past. I'm your host, Deb, viewing and reviewing the soapiest, sudsiest primetime storylines of the 80s. That's right. It is another Knots Landing Takeover, Season 1, Episode 8, Civil Wives. So whether you're new to this or true to this, sit back and enjoy. Tell the kids it's time to play outside or out of sight. Tell Bay no questions, suggestions, or concerns for the next 25 to 35 minutes. Everyone else in earshot, be cool, be quiet, or be kicked out because we really have got to get to the nitty-gritty of this one. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is Soap Lore. Welcome back, soap aficionados, to another sudsy summary of Knots Landing. We're going to dive into the drama of yesteryear's primetime soaps. We're lathering up with a recap of Knots Landing Season 1, Episode 8, called Civil Wives. I am feeling fantastic after watching this episode. Couldn't believe it. Once again, the writers are doing their thing. So let me give you a little bit of a rundown, okay? Picture this. Sid's ex-wife, that's right, he has an ex. Annie has a mother. Sid's ex-wife, Susan, sashays into town, and she needs a signature for some paperwork for the kid. But what she really wants to do? She came to be messy. She came to stir the pot. And trust me, she bought a spoon big enough to do just that. Karen, ever the gracious host, invites Susan to stay for the weekend, setting the stage for a test of Sid's fidelity. I mean, this is a classic episode. This is a classic cocktail of deception, temptation, 70s residue, fashion sense, audacity, hope, love, shame, guilt, all the things you could want wrapped up into a 48-minute just chef's kiss of an episode. So go ahead and grab yourself some popcorn and something bubbly. Do what you need to do. This one is super sudsy. Can't wait to jump in. I'm going to give you the rundown in under 10 minutes, and then we'll come back and talk about some particulars. All right. Sid's ex-wife, Annie's mother, shows up in town out of the blue. All the girls are standing outside, you know, gossiping, kikiing, having a good old time when this taxi cab pulls up, out walks Susan. Now, Karen doesn't recognize her at first because, you know, she's never met her, but immediately Susan introduces herself and Karen, not one to turn down an invitation to make someone feel welcome, invites her into the house. So the girls are sitting around with her smiling uncomfortably because they're like, oh my God, you let your husband's ex in? Karen's acting like this is no big deal. She gets on the phone. She's like, hey, Sid, guess who's here? Susan. He's like, Susan who? Susan, your ex. She can't say your ex-wife. Annie's mom, Susan. He's like, oh my God, get her out of the house. I don't want to see her. I don't want to talk to her. Get her out of the way. So I'm thinking immediately this is going to be a problem. Not only does Karen not kick Susan out of the house, she invites her to stay for dinner. That way she and Sid can talk and everyone can catch up. She can meet the kids. It'll be a wonderful thing. Now, Laura and Valene are looking at each other like, They're giving each other that look. Friends give each other like, girl, meet me outside in 20 minutes. We're going to talk about this. Because everyone can see what a giant shit show this is about to be. By this point in the conversation, Susan is tired of the fluffy pleasantries. And she's like, look, girl, I know you want to know about me because I want to know about you. Aren't you curious much? We have 17 years of stuff to catch up on. And hey, we both like the same kind of men. So I think we're going to be fine. It is incredibly awkward. Karen goes upstairs to change while Valene continues to entertain Susan downstairs. Now, Susan forgets that Valene is there. Once Sid comes walking into the door, she gets up and it's like this very seductive, oh, nice to see you again, Sid. It's been such a long time. It's very breathy and weird. And he seems to be kind of digging her too. Like, dang, she's cute. It's you never look more beautiful, Susan. It's wonderful. If you'll excuse me, let me go talk to Karen. So he runs upstairs and Susan longingly stares after him. Now, Valene's sitting on the couch. She peeps the whole thing. She's looking incredibly uncomfortable. Like, oh my goodness. He goes upstairs to immediately confront Karen about this impromptu dinner invitation. He says that Susan is a scammer, always has been, always will be. This is 100% a scam. Karen plays dumb and she's like, you really think this gorgeous woman came back here just to what? To seduce you? He's like, probably. Like, duh, obviously. Turns out that the papers Susan needs him to sign for Annie are concerning like an inheritance that Susan's family left Annie. So Sid doesn't understand why he would even be involved. Apparently she needs both parents' signature. They have to agree on how the money is going to be dispersed. She claims, Susan that is, that her lawyer was supposed to set up the meeting. That's why she showed up in California. That's why she showed up on his doorstep. They're supposed to have a meeting at his house. She's so surprised that her lawyer's not here. It's super weird. And the state has heard this game more times than a little bit. He's not buying any of it. So he's like, let me guess. He finishes her sentence as she's telling them what's happening. He says, let me guess, your lawyer is now on vacation and you don't know his home number, so you have no way of getting hold of him, right? She's like, that's right. It's this moment in the show that he knows for a fact that she still wants him. She came there specifically for him. The other little part of this is while the women were outside in the beginning, they were chit-chatting. Laura's telling the girls that her dad is sick. He lives in Pittsburgh. She'd really like to just go kind of check in on him. It doesn't seem like it's super serious, but she'd like to go see him and she'd like to take Jason, her son. Only Richard, the lawyer, mind you, says they don't have enough money for all that. Airline tickets are super expensive. You can't go. Laura's had a little time to think about it, and she just manned up. She bought the tickets over the phone, and now she's telling Richard about it. She tells Richard she's taking the baby to Pittsburgh, but he wants her to cancel the trip because he's allegedly sick. He's a huge baby. He doesn't want her to leave the house. He likes controlling her. You're going to stay here. I'm sick. Your dad will be fine. Only the phone rings, and it's Sid asking him to come over and look over these papers because, hey, if Susan's quote-unquote lawyer can't make it, hey, I know a lawyer. Richie, would you mind coming over to look at this stuff? He's like, yeah, no problem. All of a sudden, he feels fine. He then breaks it down for us that the paperwork would give Annie her trust fund all at once instead of giving it to her over time, like allowing her to acclimate to her newfound wealth. While he's reading this, looking over the contract, he's, you know, Susan is extra touchy-feeling. She's basically winning him over to her side. She has a plan. So she's like, I think it's a wonderful idea to give her all her money. Now, Richard, because he's being felt up and down, he's like, oh, yeah, it's probably a good idea. Of course, Sid thinks it's a terrible idea. You don't give an irresponsible teenager this huge windfall. Like, give her a little bit at a time so that she can learn to be responsible. Susan doesn't really think they should give the money to the kid. She just needed a reason to have to linger on for a little bit. Her plan is to delay this conversation till the following Monday. Allegedly, it's like Friday. So she just wants, let's wait till Monday till my lawyer gets here and then we'll figure it out. I guess I'll go look for a hotel. Ever the gracious host, my girl Karen's like, no, honey, you can stay here. Why don't you stay here? We'll clean out one of the kids' rooms. It'll be no big deal. Sid's super pissed because he's like, I don't want her in my house. I don't want her anywhere near me. This is a mess. He's upset. Richard leaves and decides that Laura can indeed go to Pittsburgh. As a matter of fact, he thinks it's a great idea. Stay a little longer if you want. He's got his eyes on the prize. Richard, on the other hand, is upset. He's so upset that he can't sleep that night. He goes down to the kitchen to pour himself a glass of milk when who comes sashaying down the stairs but Susan. Now, Susan peeped game because she used to be married to him. She knows that if he's upset or he can't sleep, he has to pace and drink milk. So she bides her time, comes down to the kitchen, and starts complimenting him on how well he's doing for himself. You have such a wonderful middle-class wife, a wonderful middle-class family, a wonderful middle-class life. I never thought you'd have it this good. I'm really happy for you. I'm really happy for you, Sid. Then she plants a lingering kiss on his lips in his kitchen in Karen's house. Oh, as if that's not enough, the next day she shows up to his job. She's taking it in like, wow, he's not working on jalopies anymore. He's got this classic car dealership. He's making good money. He's everything her mother thought he wouldn't be. She's feeling extra sentimental and starts waxing poetic about the first time they met. He was under a jalopy car fixing it. She was ready to climb under that car and mount him right then and there. Pardon my language, kiddos. She then starts talking about what a wonderful, tender lover he was and how she just wasn't used to that at the time and she really loved him. And if they could have only just stayed in bed romping and running around all day just doing the grown-up, they would have lasted for so much longer. But unfortunately, they had to live lives or whatnot. Her mom got in her ear and was like, dump this broke boy before you become a broke girl. So she did. The rest of her life hasn't turned out so great. She's met some men in the past, but none of them hold a flame to Sid. Now, if this is game, we'll never know. Her point of going there was to seduce him. Now, why she got on a plane and came out there, I tend to believe she's telling the truth, at least for now. Anyways, Sid is feeling this a little bit. You can tell because she keeps saying, I need you, Sid. Just, oh my God, I need you. I need you. Meanwhile, while all this is going on at the car dealership, Karen is outside minding her business when Richard comes slinking up. He's all eagerly scurrying towards her like a little rat. And he wastes no time sniffing around. She's just trying to water her marigolds in peace. She's like, hey, Rich, what do you want? Oh, you know, Laura and the baby are out of town, so I thought I'd stop by. I just don't know what I'm going to do with myself this weekend. And she's like, thinking he just needs a little bit of dinner. But she also kind of clocked that he was feeling on Susan. Sid comes home, and he's a little bit upset. And Karen's worried because she thinks that Susan showed up to his job. She asks him as much. He tells her, yes, she came. It was awkward. She can tell that he's not really feeling great about it. She tells him, if you have to do something, it's okay. I didn't really understand what she meant by that, and we'll talk about that here in a bit. Later that evening, they all end up going to dinner. Richard, Sid, Susan, and Karen. Dinner's going fine. It's dinner and dancing, actually. They're like at a dinner club. Music is playing. Richard and Susan are dancing at first, and then Karen and Sid are dancing. And they just switch room. Now, when Karen starts dancing with Richard, you can tell it's very lighthearted, very platonic. It's very fun. They're dancing a little more up-tempo to the slower song. And you look over and see Susan and Sid. And she is basically melting down his body. It is slow. It is sensual. There is no doubt about what she wants to do. And just in case the audience was confused, she tells him as much. She's like, hey, I'm going to leave your house tonight. I'm going to go get a room at the Beverly Hills Hotel. He makes a sly comment about her knowing all the best hotels in town. And she's like, you know what? I want you to stop by Monday and we're going to have some day sex. He, of course, turns her down. This turns into a little bit of an argument later on at the house. Not so much an argument, but they have a very adult conversation, he and Karen, about the state of their marriage and the state of his feelings for his ex. Susan does not take kindly to being rejected, so she has Richard leave or take her from this club. Susan does not take kindly to rejection, and she asks Richard to take her home. Go ahead and drive me home or drive me away. He drives her up to this, like the, I'm going to call it a cliff, a pier overlooking Knott's Landing and the greater LA area. He wants to show her the view. And he says something really weird. She's turned off completely. So she says, you know what? Just put the keys in the ignition. Drive until I tell you to stop. They end up driving to a hotel motel Holiday Inn. So the next day, she comes back by, Susan that is, to Sid and Karen's house for one last try. She is sent on her way. Karen and Sid are then forced to sit down and talk about this whole situation, how out of hand it could have gotten. And that's it. That's all for this episode. Where do we begin? I found Sid's and Karen's marriage to be solid, but always a little bit weird. He always seems a bit aloof to me. He doesn't really seem to take much of what she says seriously. She's also a passionate person. She probably flips out more time than a little bit. They never seem to be on the same page about much. It shouldn't work, but it does. The chemistry works because they are often forced to come back to each other. At least they have been in the last 8 episodes. I was very interested in seeing how this was going to play out because initially, when Karen sees Susan, it's very clear that she has never met this woman. She knew who she was immediately, and it seems that Susan has been living rent-free in Karen's head for many, many years, and this was the opportunity to go ahead and make sure that is going to be cleaned out. She wants Susan to be a thing of the past, but there's only one way to find out if that's the case. Now, the backstory with Sid and Susan is that they met when they were young. He was poor. She's very rich. She comes from from blue blood. She is an heiress. They get married. Her mother makes her leave him, or that's the way the story is told. Now, there's a version that Sid has told Karen. There's how he sees it, and then there's how Karen sees it. And then, of course, there's how Susan sees it. It seems for Sid that Susan left him. That's how he looks at it. Doesn't matter if her mom told her to. Doesn't matter if she wanted to. At the end of the day, she chose not to be married to him. He would have very much stayed married to her. It seems like when he and Karen met, he was still very much in love with Susan, but he also fell in love with Karen and married her. They clearly had no secrets because Sid has a daughter. She has to know. Karen knew coming into this that there was someone before her, but she's been with him 17 years. What's been dancing in the back of her mind all this time is that Sid's first love left him high and dry. He didn't leave her, so there's always going to be that flame in her mind. So when this woman shows up on her doorstep, she can't afford to break down. She can't afford to be anything but lovely because she needs to appear calm, cool, and collected. Not just for the sake of saving face in front of her friends or saving face in front of Susan. She needs Sid to believe that she is perfectly okay with this. Just to see what he will do. Because you see, if she shows any emotion, he's gonna adapt to whatever emotion she's emoting. So if she's upset, he's going to be extra standoffish. She wants a genuine reaction like, listen, I think I know my man. I know I love my man. I need to see if he loves her. So I'm going to play it cool and let Sid be Sid and do whatever he feels like he needs to do. Now, right from the beginning, Sid was not with this. He left this woman, or this woman left him. He didn't want to deal with her for a reason. Sid knew that Susan was going to be playing games. He knew there's only one reason she would be there. After all, Annie isn't a toddler. She's not 5 years old. She's 18 years old, 18 or 19 years old. So there's really not a lot he could say or do at this point in her life that would change anything or that he absolutely needed to be there to do. He knew she was a liar. It did not appear that Karen knew that just yet. By the end of the episode, we'll know for a fact that she expected this woman to play a little bit dirty, but she expected her to play fair. So at the restaurant / dinner club, of course, Sydney, Karen, Richard, and Susan are eating dinner or whatever. And after Sid rejects her, Susan leaves with Richard. He takes her to the pier or to the, I don't know what you call it. I'm going to call it makeout point. I grew up in the desert, so I don't know what they call it. Drove up on the side of a mountain where you can see the beautiful, the lights. And he says, you think you can lick it? And she's like, what did you just say to me? He repeats himself. She's like, are you high? Like, why are you talking to me like that? No. In film noir, this is him explaining. In film noir, they often say things like that. Like, can you beat this view? And she's like, shut up, please. Shut up and drive. Take me to the hotel. She's super pissed because she, too, had a very well laid out plan. She didn't know Karen had one because Karen's poker face is a little bit better. But these are two women who love the same man, or at least one of them loves him, the other one lusts after him, with one plan. And that's to take or to keep him. She's pissed it didn't work out. So she's like, you know what, Richard, you'll come in a handy dandy second. So they go to the Hotel Motel Holiday Inn. Now, earlier in the show, she was waxing poetic about how wonderful Sid is in the sack and how she just needs a little bit of that to get her through the rest of her life. So thirsty. It would appear that Richard can't hold a candle to Sid because it's the next morning. She is putting back on her clothes from the night previous. And he is bouncing around, putting on his clothes, trying to make, you know, date number two, round number two plans. She's like, yeah, that was a one and done. Please, please don't think that's going anywhere else. But then, in one of the boldest moves I've seen in vintage primetime soap operas, she not only puts back on the previous night's clothes, she not only walks out of this Hotel Motel Holiday Inn, she waltzes right back into Sid and Karen's house. Now, baby, manners aside, you have got to have quite the audacity, quite the gall to walk into another woman's house, ask for a cup of coffee, and then tell her that she almost lost her man. We'll get to that scene here in a second. Now, when Richard left the restaurant with Susan, mind you, Karen was watching very carefully. She was betting her bottom dollar that Sid wasn't going to take the bait, and of course he didn't. But what she was not expecting is for Susan to jump ship and get in the car with Richard because she knows what's up. She knows exactly who this woman is at this point. She underestimated her. Now she's standing there agawk while Sid is looking at her like, I don't understand what you don't understand. Didn't I tell you? I've been told you who this was. I told you what she was going to do. He knew that she was going to jump in bed with Richard. This was no surprise. But now Karen's like, oh, crap. She's starting to blame herself because her plan was to make sure that Sid chose her over Susan. Because her battered woman BFF, actually, I don't know if she's battered. She's not battered. She's definitely emotionally abused. Her emotionally abused best friend, her husband is screwing my husband's ex-wife. What do you do with that? She feels horrible. And now it's all coming to a head. Sid's super pissed too, because he now realizes what Karen's game was here. She wasn't cool. She wasn't calm. She wasn't collected. She set him up to see if he would take the bait. And he feels a way about that because they've been married for so long. Now, once all the dust is settled at the end of the episode, they don't have an argument. They have an adult conversation. She admits that it was important to her to have Susan's larger than life presence in her mind be completely wiped clean by him rejecting her. That's the only way she was going to be able to move through the rest of her life knowing that he no longer wanted this woman, because in her mind, Susan was a love of his life. He was definitely in love with both of them at the same time, but then, you know, he married her. So she's still thinking he's holding on to this torch. And when she told him earlier in the show that if he needed to do something, he could. And I thought she was like, if you need to curse her out and kick her out of the house, what should you do? No, she's like, this is your hall pass, basically. If you need to, you know, see if there's anything there, I'm giving you permission. Which was a stone cold setup, and he knew that. He tells her, you know what, Karen, you're right. Once upon a time, I was heartbroken and left high and dry by this woman. I did love her for a very, very, very long time. I love both of you at the same time. But I hope you know that the last 17 years haven't been me patiently waiting and pining for her. I have been in love with you. And they share a story about when their daughter was sick and he looks over at her and realizes that, like, he's super in love with Karen and that Susan doesn't hold a flame anymore. So Karen is his life. Karen is a woman he wants to build the rest of his life with. And he's proven that time again. So he feels offended that she would even tempt him in that way. Now, although the conversation seemed healthy, I tend to agree with what he's saying. That's a weird gambit. You're risking a lot, expecting your spouse to be perfect. Not perfect, but at least not take the bait. But what if he had not taken the bait and decided, you know what, I don't like you either. Y'all are two of the same. Y'all are both trying to con me into doing something I don't want to do. It could have backfired in her face. It didn't. Of course, by the end of the episode, they are lovey-dovey and still going strong. But I love that they're imperfectly perfect. You know who's not perfect? Richard. So Richard tells Sid at the end of the episode that absolutely nothing happened. He just drove Susan around all night. But Karen knows for a fact what happened because, baby, Susan's audacity got the very best of her right there at Karen's kitchen table. The morning after everything went down, let me paint this picture for you. Karen is once again minding her own business in her own kitchen when in walks Susan dressed in last night's clothes. She's got on a sequin dress, a white fur coat in Los Angeles, looking like old money and smelling like cheap hotel sex. She asks for a cup of coffee, sits down, and makes herself comfortable. All she can say at first is like, girl, I always take it too far. I really do. She then tells Karen that the other day when she went to see Sydney, she had him. It was going to be on and popping. Had they gone in his office right then and there, would have been over. Would have been over for you, Karen. She wanted him, and he definitely wanted her. And you know what? He was almost there. Now, Karen is calmly reading her newspaper. She is keeping a cool demeanor, and she's like, I mean, I come from the school of almost doesn't count. Wanting to and actually doing are two totally different things, and he didn't. As far as I'm concerned, almost doesn't count. Now, Susan's like, okay, baby, let me let you know one thing. You didn't win. I lost. I got a little too eager. I executed my plan a little too quickly. That is the only reason I'm not stealing your man as we speak. See, Susan had a plan. She showed up, much like Karen, with one mission. She had a plan. She knew this man. She thought it was normal under normal circumstances, according to her. It would have been game over for them. It would have been the end of Karen and Sid as we know it. But Karen's like, baby, let me let you know, you were never going to steal my man. Okay? I am the current. You are the former. I am his future. You are his very distant past. I knew for a fact my man was never going to touch you because, quite frankly, you're not good enough for him. The only problem I have with you is that I thought you were going to be scandalous. I knew you was going to be hoish. I did not know you were going to step outside of this box. It's one thing to try to seduce my man, but now you got my battered friend's husband out here committing adultery. You are such a snake. You are so disgusting. I knew my man would never touch you. I win. Bye-bye. I'm summarizing this. But yeah, ultimately, the only regret that Karen has is that, oh crap, now I've drug Laura into this. I didn't mean to, but I did. Excellent episode. All in all, just perfect. So many layers here. I love that they'd never met before. That's kind of odd to me that you would know someone for that long and never bump into each other. But I guess Annie has never, maybe she's going to join the show later. Maybe not. She's probably off shooting. She didn't need to shoot Indiana Jones for another 4 years. So she has time. Love that movie. But very, very good. Now, my only thought here. Oh, there was a little caveat. Sid and Karen's son, Eric, has a huge crush on Ginger. He goes over at the beginning of the episode to, she either invites him in or he carries in something. I can't remember how he ends up at her house, but he ends up at her house and she puts on a record and it's this big band jazz. It sounds like Goof Troop music, like something like that. You know what I'm saying? And they bond. She goes, man, I didn't know we were kindred spirits. She introduces this word to him and explains that, you know, we have similar interests. And they start talking about how cool this sort of music is. And they hope they make a comeback. And by the end of the conversation, Eric is smitten. He thinks Ginger loves him and it's all wonderful. So he goes back by the next day. Now, Kenny flies in or comes into the house just long enough to let Ginger know that he has to babysit. Oh, what is the name of that group? The people Lucy was dancing with. Something Pyramid. What the heck is their name? It doesn't matter. Eagle Eye Pyramid, Clumsy Pyramid. I don't know, whoever the hell. Clockwork Orange. They can't, they're refusing to go on stage or something. He's got to fly to wherever part of the world he has to fly to just for the weekend, though. You know he's going to sleep with somebody else. It's very obvious. He invites her knowing that she has to work Monday, so she can't go. But Eric's there to keep her company. So Eric's thinking they're in love. And she asks him how old he is. He tells her he's 15. And she goes, oh, perfect. I have a little sister. She'll be here in a little bit. Why don't I set you guys up? And he leaves heartbroken. That's it. That's all for that. I'm sure the little girl's going to pop up and that'll be his new love interest. If this episode taught us nothing else, it tells us that until next time, keep your friends close, your enemies closer, and your soap operas close-ish. That's it. That's all for this episode. Join me next time as we jump into more vintage primetime soap opera debauchery. Stay hydrated, moisturized, and keep all of your drama on TV.